You're in the loop. We're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating, and maybe give you plus 5 GUE along the way. Let's introduce this week's hosts.
What's up, everybody? I'm Evie, and I'm extremely confused as to how it's already halfway through the season. Someone please stop the passage of time! My Twitter handle is at DoubleFlots.
Hi, I'm Tilda, your friendly neighborhood political scientist and finals anxiety-stressed grad student. You can find me on Twitter, at Tekilda.
Hey, I'm Kat. I just got back from Vancouver last night, up great and early to record this episode. You can find all my Grand Prix final shenanigans on Twitter, at KatTweets with no E's.
So, let's start with some news. So the first one is quite sad. The French coach Jean-François Ballester has unfortunately passed away of a heart attack at the age of 53 after returning from an international competition in Tallinn. So Ballester was the one who coached Aliona Savchenko and Bruno Massot to their Olympic gold medal this year. Our hearts go out to his family and friends. May he rest in peace.
In addition, Javier Fernandez of Spain has confirmed that he is going to retire next year in 2019, and he wants to compete at the European Championships at the end of January, where he's going to go for his 7th consecutive title, but he won't be at Spanish Nationals, but he'll still skate in the exhibition gala.
And in some slightly frightening news, we have Ashley Kane, the American pair skater with her partner Tim LeDuc. During their free skate this weekend at the Golden Spin of Zagreb in Croatia, they had a really bad fall. Ashley landed on the back of her head while they were exiting a lift. You know, Tim stumbled and lost his balance and his grip on her. She fell to the ice head first, and she seemed to be kind of knocked unconscious briefly until Tim helped her up and they finished the program. She was checked out at a local hospital nearby, and she's going to continue her treatment from the injury back home. But it was certainly a scary moment, and we hope that she gets better soon. Obviously, there were a lot of questions around the referee at the event not stopping the program after she suffered that really serious head injury, considering head injuries are really, really serious. And it's a question of whether the referee at the event or the officials can be held accountable for something that could potentially be life-threatening.
Yeah, that was definitely a really scary accident. Check out at your own risk, I guess.
And also check out our medical episode where we discuss it briefly. This kind of situation, what should be done.
And to end this off on a really positive note, the Chinese pair, Sui Wenjing and Han Tong, have announced that they will make their season's debut at Chinese Nationals this month, and they will be debuting new programs. So we are so excited to see them because it will have been almost a year since they last competed. So very exciting to see their new programs.
A few sad news and one happy news.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, Javi is like bittersweet, so.
Yeah.
So we publish a weekly roundup of news stories you might have missed during the week on our website. So just go to inthelowpodcast.com and you'll find all our articles there.
Watch the fist pump. There it is.
So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the 2018 Grand Prix Final.
Woo!
Yay!
Can't believe it's over.
It's crazy that it's already at an end.
The series is over.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, after the last event ended, it was just like, wow, it's over. It's
the
really
season is going
over.
Way too fast.
It feels like it's lasted a year or something.
Yeah.
It's the emotional stress just compounding every single week for the past 2 months. And now it's finally over for now until, you know, we get into the second half of the season with even more crazy things.
Yep.
Can't wait.
Oh, well. Well, Kat, you had the opportunity to go to the final this year, along with
amazing.
A lot of other people from the In the Loop team. What was the event like on the scale of all the events you've been to?
I think that it was really good, actually. The venue was a lot smaller, I'd say. It was smaller than Skate Canada, and there were less seats because there wasn't, like, a second tier of seats. But the crowds were really, really good. And I heard that earlier in the week that the reports of the ice were really good, too. So that probably contributed to why we, like, had a really high percentage of good performances. Like, there weren't that many meltdowns, I think, across all the juniors and seniors, which is, that's a lot of performances.
And that's good to hear, especially since we've had so many competitions in a row of bad ice conditions.
I mean, if there's anything we can trust with Canada is that we'll have some good ice.
Well, at least this rink was Olympic sized as opposed to Skate Canada, which wasn't.
It was built for an Olympic, for the Olympics. So it was interesting that it was on like the UBC campus. So there are students wandering around too. And I'm just like wondering what must they be thinking? Just like you have like Olympic figure skaters skating here. But in some regards, it was a little strange. Skate Canada has always had a pretty strict camera policy, but they never really enforced it. Like at ACI, they cared for like 10 minutes and after that, everyone just kind of got away scot-free for taking photos. Same thing at Skate Canada. Skate Canada did not care at all until the literal last day. And by that point, everyone was like, all right, sure, and then took photos. But at Grand Prix Final, they did search for cameras pretty carefully after like the first day, like on Friday. And some people had to get their photos, like they had to erase all of their photos.
Yeah, I saw reports of that. That was really worrying.
Yeah, but at the same time, a lot of people got away scot-free. Some of us had to deal with security and our cameras, but then like some of us just didn't get flagged at all. So it's like this inconsistency with the camera policy was kind of jarring, I guess. And it's not super clear either, like what they're going to allow and how they're going to deal with it. Because some people did get flagged inside the rink as well, but then as soon as they went away, then no one cared. but then there was like this one person that came around, was really strict about it. And I think they're usually volunteers. The actual security people don't seem to know very much about cameras. So yeah, that was a little bit strange. But overall, the event was really good. Like the fans were really warm and the reactions were really good. I think we were really enthusiastic, though. Like, we did a lot of screaming, which is why my throat is a little bit
hoarse. We could hear you on the stream.
Yes, I know. My voice is obnoxiously loud, so if you go back, you can definitely hear me in, like, a lot of these replays. And, yeah. But, yeah, great time.
Okay, should we talk about the pairs?
So, we have our gold medalists. First-time Grand Prix Final champions Vanessa James and Morgan Cyprès from France.
All right, and then silver medalists Cheng Peng and Yang Jin from China.
And in third place, we have Evgenia Tarasova and Vladimir Morozov of Russia.
Wow, guys, this pairs event.
It was pretty insane.
It was so insane.
It was such a high-quality pairs event, and there were so many surprise results, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, not in both of the segments, we had results that were completely outstanding and really, really made the whole event such a fun thing to watch.
And yeah, it's not even like an upset. It was just like the best case scenarios, I guess.
Yeah.
in certain instances.
Definitely. I mean, we had obviously Vanessa James and Morgan Cyprès finally winning a Grand Prix final. And it's the first time they've ever qualified for the final and they win it. And it's so good to see them be able to bounce back like that after a somewhat disappointing short program to completely, yeah, you know, completely slay the field and score a season's best and a world record in the free skate. It's fantastic to see because they're just such a wonderful team. They're so talented.
It almost felt like a culmination of just the disappointment that they had last year of just missing the Grand Prix final and then just missing the European podium. And then ever since they got their world bronze medal, they've really capitalized on the momentum that I mentioned in the last episode as well. Like, they're undefeated this season, which is incredible going into nationals and the championships part of the season. So I'm just so, so happy for them.
So in the last episode, I did talk about having my reservations about their free program. But I just have to say, they completely sold it this time. They really sold it. I mean, they were so strong and so confident. I could just feel like their entire weight, like their projection. They were just like the definition of strength, you know?
Yeah, Canada really loves James and Tsipras. Like, they got a standing ovation during the free program, and they were only the second skater. Like, usually the event builds, and so the last skaters usually get all of the love. And when they were at Skate Canada, they skated last, which is why they got such a huge, that was like their moment. But I feel like they had another moment at the Grand Prix final too, even though they were skated so early. I still wish they would change the ending to their free program.
Yeah.
I feel like it looks awkward. I already mentioned that I don't like when it ends with a lift kind of, but they keep getting deductions on
it. Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. I don't personally find it that awkward to look at, but just the constant time violations that they've gotten on it.
At one point is a lot sometimes with these kinds of competitions. Like, don't forget, they were off the podium by 0.01 at Euros last season. So if that happens at Euros and the competition is a lot tighter than it was here, like, that could be pretty detrimental to them. So please rework the ending.
And of course, we have to mention, I think, kind of the surprise silver medalists of the event.
Yes!
Peng Jin. Oh my God. I was not expecting them to, for one, win the short program.
Yeah.
Phenomenal program. It was perfect. I've never seen them perform that program so well. I don't think I've ever seen them perform a program like that so well, ever. It's amazing.
Especially since she twisted her ankle right before the competition. I think the reports came out after the short program, so everyone was like, oh my God, like, please survive the free program. But yeah, they looked really, really good in both segments. I was so surprised, actually, at how warmly they were received by the audience here. I feel like the response was a lot more lukewarm at Skate Canada, but it might be because there were a lot more international fans at Grand Prix Final. But yeah, the crowd loved Peng Jin, especially their short program. And you could just see that as soon as they finished the throw during the short program, they just really lit up and the crowd was so into it, and they performed it so well.
They really did. It was just, everything about it was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't completely agree with the PCS they got. I think it should have been a lot higher. I don't understand how Zabiako and Ember got higher than they did when their program was kind of when it had it was flawed, it had errors in it. But you know, that's kind of the constant struggle I feel when you're complaining about teams from Asian federations and their PCS is never as high as they deserve it to. But oh well, it's so good to see them have such good skates here, especially since, you know, in the free skate they have the base value disadvantage because they don't have they only have double salchos, not triple sals. So, you know, they're going in with that disadvantage, but if they perform clean and everyone else doesn't, then obviously they're going to they're going to capitalize on it, and they did here. It's just, it's so good to see a Chinese pairs team on the Grand Prix Final podium. I just love Peng and Jin so much. They've grown on me so much over this season.
Yeah, and as soon as they get those side-by-side sals, like, they'll really be contenders for the top spot, because that base value reduction really is a lot. They can score, if they can score 141 without another triple, then they can definitely score mid-40s. And even into the 50s if they get the PCS boost after this competition. So really, really hoping that happens maybe next season. They're really looking good. And I just wanted to say that I should have known that Peng and Jin would do really well at the Grand Prix Final, because Vancouver is a special place for Chinese pairs, because that was where Shannon Zhao and Peng and Tong won gold and silver at the Vancouver Olympics 8 years ago. So it was really lucky that Grand Prix Final was there. And I also want to say that I saw Shannon Zhao in the kiss and cry area,
yeah,
in the coach area. And they were so excited after their free skate. Like, they were hugging and cheering really, really loud. I think that McGab might have a video of it. But yeah, it was a sweet moment, because yeah, they're like one of my favorite they're one of my favorite pairs ever. So yeah, a great moment.
So, Teresa Van Morisov in third place. I have to say, I was really sad at their free skate. I really like them, and I really like that program. I like the feeling of it, but they just after the mistakes, they you could just feel like how their concentration was broken, their confidence was shook, and just like seeing that just really it felt quite brutal, you know?
So Tarasov and Morozov, this is the first time that I'm seeing them live, and they really are just so pristine. Like, that's the word that comes to mind when I think about them, is pristine. We were sitting in the opposite corner, basically, from like the twist corner, I guess. But he launches her so high in the air, it almost looks like it's twice his height. And he's like 6 feet tall. It's so massive and so impressive. Pairs already just looks more impressive in person, in my opinion. And especially if you're sitting in the front row, you're already lower to the ground. So it just looks really high. But it almost seemed like as soon as she made the mistake on the throw, they kind of gave up on the performance. Like it had the same feeling as like when they botched their free at the Olympics, where it's just like they kind of gave up.
Their faces at the end.
Yeah, they have that resigned face. It's like the sigh. All right, that happened. Okay. Like, you know, it doesn't seem to at least destroy them. You know, it's like they've kind of resigned themselves to it. And as soon as they should be really the top team because their elements are so solid. They should be racking up the TTS like crazy, but because they keep making mistakes and then giving up on the performance, you leave so many points on the table, and it's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, hopefully that they can regroup as a team, you know, assess what needs to be worked on, because they've got Russian nationals in just a bit over a week now, and then Euros next month. So I think they really need to work on, you know, fixing their frame of mind when they have issues, even early, if they have issues early in the program or towards the middle, so they'll be able to keep the momentum up even if they make mistakes, and they'll be able to keep their performance level up. Because both of the, like, I think their free skate is a really strong program for them. It's probably my favorite of theirs, that like in their entire careers. The short program is kind of not really my thing.
Campy.
It's a bit too campy for me. You know, it's no Candyman, but you know, it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But I think that they still perform that program pretty well. You know, they're all kind of smiley. I think Evgenia really, you know, her smile lights up the room when she, in the short program, kind of, she's very expressive. But again, with the errors, that kind of faded away when they were so focused on just getting the rest of the program as clean as they could make it. So I think, you know, that's obviously something that develops as a team progresses throughout seasons. You know, they get better with coping with problems and things that go wrong. But yeah, I really want to see them perfect both of these programs. I want to see them skate these programs clean, because I think especially the free skate could be really effective.
Yeah, because they have not put together two clean programs in a really long time. Like, that hasn't happened this season. Didn't happen the last couple competitions that I remember from them last season either. So I hope that they can, find a way to kind of clean up their free program and maybe find a way to, like, not resign themselves after maybe just one small mistake, because then the mistake pile up and then they keep losing points. So
that throw triple loop though in the free, that was pretty great.
Yeah,
it's huge.
She has such gorgeous lines and posture. Her air positions are fantastic. Like, it's so frustrating that they don't put it together.
Yes,
they could be a little bit more emotive, but like, just aesthetically, they're so beautiful. We just quickly want to mention Zabiako and Ember. Obviously, they placed fourth here. Their performance was definitely a surprise, because they're another one of those teams that, like Tarasov and Morozov, they have such clean, crisp elements, beautiful lines, but have not put it together. And I remember being so surprised in the free when the lift, they had an aborted lift where he tried to pick her up and then didn't, or mistimed it and then did it again, but then it got invalidated. And I remember gasping at that and saying to my friend next to me, like, the door is open for Peng and Jin right now, because that's, I've never seen that happen from them.
It's definitely a shock from such a usually pretty solid team to have an issue like that.
Yeah, and that was also after they had a couple of other scratchy landings on a throw and a side-by-side, I think, as well. So that, yeah, really, really shocked here, but it was definitely a surprise.
So the men's medalists at this event, in gold we have Nathan Chen of the US.
And then in silver we have Shoma Uno from Japan.
And our bronze medalist was Junwon Cha from Korea.
Keeping up that bronze streak.
Yes, it's a bronze blessing, like silver curse and a bronze blessing.
And let's remember that Junwon originally only had one Grand Prix assignment.
Yes. Yeah.
And he got his second assignment really late.
What a great result for him, honestly. Great momentum, and he's just been doing so well, his consistency.
It's so good to see him rise up so much this season. I'm so proud of him. Like, being the first ever Korean man to medal at a Grand Prix final is no small feat. And the fact that he did that while also skating with a really persistent boot problem. He said that he's been taking prescription painkillers for the past couple of weeks and been icing his feet pretty regularly as well, because he's had this like lingering boot issue for like all of the season. It's so impressive to see him be able to skate as well as he is with those problems. And the fact that he still has so much left to do this season, like, he's already back in Korea now, and he has to go through the Korean national qualifying competitions. I believe there are two of them, and then
Nats.
Yeah, I'm confused as to why that the Korean Fed doesn't have a system where,
like, a buy system.
Yeah, like most other federations have that kind of system where previous champions or skaters of like high merit don't have to compete in the qualifying competitions, like regionals or sectionals or those kind of equivalent competitions in different countries. Korea makes all the skaters compete in those every single year, and it's really confusing.
Especially since he's like the only men's skater they have right now that can bring in results. Like, first Korean man to medal in the Grand Prix, win both Grand Prix, and
get bronze medal at both Grand Prix.
Yes, and get bronze at the Grand Prix final as well. Like, this is such an amazing season for June. Like, Korean Fed should definitely give him a pass. Poor kid has been competing so much. He also went to two challenger events as well. So
yeah, he did. He's currently first in the overall season's rankings because he's done the two Challenger Series competitions, the two Grand Prix and the final, and he's gotten medals at all of them. So of course he's going to be up there.
And me and Evie talked a bit before about how the men's field is pretty open right now, right?
Yeah.
Because you have, obviously, the top three, arguably, Hanyu, Uno, and Chen. But then you sort of have had some weak performances from, Bohyang Jin and Koliada. And so there's sort of an uncertainty about who will become, like, the next top six.
It's a shifting of the guards, kind of.
Right, exactly. Because you see like, Vohunov and Brass, they're, like, older. So you're sort of wondering who is going to be like the next generation and who is going to, and you know, Jin is there.
He fell on his quad toe in the free program, but that's like a new quad for him, or one that he's at least not gotten a lot of mileage on. He's gone really good with his quad sal. He still gets dinged on under rotations from time to time, but his form on them and his confidence in landing them has definitely seemed to improve.
And the fact that he could skate a pretty much note-perfect program after the pretty bad fall on the quad toe at the start of his free skate is really admirable.
Yeah, it says a lot about his mentality and his ability to regroup after a shaky start, which is really impressive for someone so young. He's only he just turned 17. So there's so much potential. So much potential.
I do think that his relative inexperience and his youth shines through in his still not quite polished skating. I think expression is a weakness for him. So that's also why I'm happy that he's using quite distinctive choreography that makes like a lasting impact, even if his expression itself isn't as strong. It reminds me a bit about Bohyang Jin doing the Spider-Man. You know, like, these highly engaging programs that capture the audience, like, even if the skater isn't quite mature yet.
Right, yeah. And, like, it's interesting that you mentioned, like, the not polished skating, because, like, Jun's appeal is that I think he has a lot of natural charisma on the ice. He has a lot of open movements on his upper body, and it really draws you in, especially when you have that like funky kind of EDM music going on in his
Disco
free skate.
Juliet.
Exactly. So I know a lot of people don't like that because, you know, it's like bad posture. It makes you look noodly and loose, but I think it works really well with the music where like he kind of like kind of grooves out to it a little bit. And it doesn't work for all skaters all the time, but at least for that program, it works really well.
I would prefer someone to be like kind of noodly and like loose than them being overly stiff. That's my opinion on it.
Right, yeah. And he's using it to enhance the expression of the music. So it comes across a lot better in that way. So, and after the free skate, Gab made a custom suharang with Jun's free skate costume. And I kind of like tossed it at him and he like picked it up and brought it with him to the kiss and cry. And that was so, so sweet.
That was so adorable to watch.
Yes. Yeah. Then we have an entire little coach cam thing or kiss and cry cam where he and Brian are talking about it while the replays are going on. And it's just so, so adorable.
And he's kept it too. There were photos of him arriving at the airport in Korea a couple hours ago and it's like sticking out of his luggage. So, he's kept
sweet.
It.
So sweet. I'm so happy for Gab. She worked so hard on it too. So
should we move to talk about the gold and silver medalists?
So yeah, in gold, we had Nathan for the second consecutive year in a row and Shoma in silver for the second consecutive year in a row. You know, obviously they were definitely the favorites for the top position going into the final, and it's not really a surprise that they occupied the top two spots on the podium. And it was pretty, for the most part, it was always going to be pretty close, I feel. And in the short program, it certainly was. You know, they were within a point of each other at the end of it.
With almost identical PCS.
It's kind of crazy. It's like, and they both had mistakes in their programs as well. You know, Nathan didn't have a combo and Shoma had the really awfully landed quad flip.
So what's up with them getting like almost the same PCS?
Yeah, with the way that they both skated here in the short program, the way that they both skated, I'm not surprised that the judges went with Nathan because he did have the higher tests and his elements were a bit cleaner. And plus Shoma didn't have a triple toe off the quad toe in his short. So I wasn't completely surprised that they went with Nathan over that, but I was very surprised that their PCS was so similar. They were, most of the components were within a point, were within like 0.25 of each other, I think.
Yeah.
And that's very surprising because I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that in certain areas, they both have components in the short program that they succeed in more than the others. Well, I think Shoma has the better skating skills of the two, even though he doesn't, you know, have a lot of one-foot skating in his programs. He does have better flow and across the ice. His edges are a lot more cleaner than Nathan's. I think in performance, I think I would probably give it to Nathan in the short program just because, especially here at the final, he performed Caravan so well.
He did. Yes. It was much better than it was at IDF when I said that I wasn't as into it. It might also be because I finally got to see it live as well. And that kind of music also plays really, really well with the audience and over the loudspeakers. It's really groovy. So the audience got really into it as well.
And even if he wasn't as clean as he was at like Skate America, where he also performed it really well, you know, I think that he was really, after the error that he had with the combo, I think he kind of like flicked the switch on side going, okay, you know, I need to sell this program because I'm going to be at a slight disadvantage because I don't have a combo. And, you know, he wasn't skating last in the segment, so he knew that there was still Shoma to come. And so he really, you know, went kind of over the top and, you know, really projected that kind of smiley like charm that Nathan has. It was really fun to watch.
Yeah, no, and I think that for me, I was just so impressed by his overall composure after his, I guess this is like a test of his first semester at Yale. I expected him to be a lot shakier than he was at the Grand Prix final just because it's his final season and I don't know what his training situation, but he really, really proved to me. Like, I know a lot of people had doubts after Japan Open. He didn't do that great, but he really proved that he can still compete among the best, even, you know, being a full-time student and taking finals. And it was just so impressive. I think I have a lot of respect for Nathan, considering how hard it is just to be a full-time student, never, like, not even a full-time student and a professional high-level athlete.
So one thing I was wondering was, do you think their PCS have stagnated, or is it because they haven't skated clean programs yet?
I feel like that's probably it. I feel like if Shoma and Nathan skated clean programs, they would definitely get more in the nines. Like, I think at Worlds, Nathan skated almost totally clean, and then he got like 91 PCS or something. So
also, return of the quad lutz for Nathan.
Yeah.
I wasn't exactly enthused to see it back here, especially. It's a snake. I wish he would drop it because, you know,
it's been, all snakes.
Yeah, it's been inconsistent in practice in a couple of events now, and then he was nowhere near close to landing it in the free. It was just completely off. When you saw the landing, you could just kind of tell immediately he wasn't going to land that. And I really wish that he would, you know, especially since he's studying full-time at the moment, kind of slack off on the technical content, you know, change it to a triple lutz, because it's really important with this new system for skaters to skate cleaner, because if you make mistakes, your tech is just going to drop. It's going to plummet.
Right.
So yeah, just, I think it's much safer for him, especially in the point that he's at in his life, to not put so much stress on himself to keep landing all of the quads that he wants to land, and, you know, chill out a little bit, you know, and maybe take focus away from the quad lutz and put it more into stabilizing the edge on his quad flip a little bit more, because again, here it was kind of iffy. I'm kind of surprised that it didn't get any edge warnings in either the short or the free, because he's been getting them pretty consistently throughout the past couple competitions, and his flip edge has never been stellar, but it's very, in the last couple times we've seen him, it's been flat, you know, bordering
dubious.
Yeah, it's been very dubious. It was hard to kind of tell here because the camera angles for us for the both of the flip in the short and the free weren't fantastic to be viewing the edges, but just looking at like the entry curve that he took, it didn't look particularly inside.
But yeah, the tech panel seemed a bit more lenient here. No one else got an edge call either, so I would think that it has to do with this specific tech panel as well.
Considering that most tech panels have been pretty strict with flip edges for like the entire season so far, it's kind of shocking to see a men's event where no one got called for them.
No one got any calls. Under rotation calls, yes, but not as many as I thought there would be. Like, they were definitely lenient on some borderline. I also think that Shoma's under rotation issues and just general shaky tech is really hindering him from advancing at this point.
Yeah.
I thought His removing the quad loop was a smart choice, but then, you know, we have the new quad salco and it isn't especially stable either.
I was so annoyed in the free skate because he did a perfect quad sal in the warm-up. It was really nice. Like when they were doing the skater introduction, I think he did one right as his name was being announced, and it was perfect, but he just couldn't get it together when it came time to actually do it.
I mean, it was downgraded, so it felt just like the quad loop all over again, basically.
Yeah. I worry because he's been having quite a lot of issues with the quads, both in practice and in competition. I worry about what's going on with that.
Yeah, and also because his program, it's really empty when his quads don't show up. Like, you really notice how empty it is. There's not that much else drawing you in, so just the way that especially the beginning part of that free skate is composed, it's literally his three quads in a row.
That's what I felt like. It was that program was the most effective at Skate Canada, where he did land those jumps at the start.
Exactly what I thought as well.
It worked really well. I was immediately drawn into the program, but you know, at NHK and here where he had problems, it made it harder for me to connect with the program. Although I will say that here, it was really nice to see that he did get three combos.
You know?
I still question the hell out of him putting all three of them in the second half of his program with his track record of landing combos. I question the hell out of that. But it's good to see that he got them. That's pretty much at this point all we can ask from Shoma, that he got his combos. So it's good to see that.
I think his strength as a skater now is mainly that he can keep it together for an entire program, even if it is messy.
Right.
Yeah, but then, you know, when it comes to the real high scores, then he's kind of held back a bit, you know? His ability to just, like, put together a program no matter what is still pretty impressive.
Shoma is really good at keeping it together, at least. Like, just barely. Just enough. Someday he'll break that silver curse at, like, major championships.
Okay, so shout out to Michael Buesena, the Potato King, doing it for all the uncles out there.
Yeah.
So his free skates to me is so much fun. He's extremely engaging. And, you know, I just have to mention Helsinki because, you know, he was skating last directly after a user broke the world record. And he was absolutely killing it and managing to, like, capitalize on the frenzy of the audience and just like fuel his performance with it. He's so cool, and I just really like him just like bringing that energy into the Grand Prix final.
He kind of exudes this YOLO energy that, like, he doesn't really, I don't want to say that he's like flippant or doesn't care, but he's just very carefree and like he doesn't really let the results get to him.
Yeah, it feels like he's skating just for the pure love that he has for skating.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel driven by any other motive other than the fact that he loves what he's doing, and that's really like authentic and charming, and I enjoy the hell out of both of his programs and his skating in general. I think I was extremely excited to see him qualify in the first place for the final, and now here he is, you know, coming in fourth. That's pretty awesome considering, you know, his uncle status. I he's such a fun skater to watch, and he just brings up the mood of every event he's at.
Also, the coach cam
footage
between him and Raph, that was really funny.
That was so cute.
I hadn't noticed that they put it up, they put it on the stream, because I was just watching them in the kiss and cry, like, when he was watching Raph at the boards, who was watching Nate. I didn't even notice until everyone started laughing at the Jumbotron.
And also, I just want to briefly say that I really enjoyed Keegan Messing. His skating is so fluid. His skating skills are so solid.
Incredibly solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, even I'm not a fan of his programs at all, which you probably know, but I still really enjoy seeing him here.
I was surprised to see him pretty much land the quad lutz in the free skate, considering it's been inconsistent throughout this whole season.
My goodness.
But, you know, he put a hand down, but otherwise, you know, it was great to see him get that on home ice in front of a home crowd, you know. It must have been such a rush.
Also, after the week he's had, remember there was the earthquake in Alaska
a
week ago? So the fact that he was able to, you know, perform pretty well at his home Grand Prix final, that was really great to see. And especially, oh my goodness, and during practice, during his run through, when he did the quad lutz, he landed so hard, like he fell so hard and hit the board so hard. And we were in the kiss and cry area sitting, so we didn't see him. We just heard a really loud thud. And that was just, it startled me so much. And he kept falling on them like a couple of more times in that exact same quarters. I was like, oh my god, Keegan, please do not do the quad lutz, like this is really bad for my heart. But, you know, that's why I was just so happy that he even landed it to some degree in his actual program, because during practice he was not doing it well at all.
Yeah, but then he hasn't really stabilized his quad toe loop,
right?
So
right.
That was an issue in both the short program and the free skate, and, you know, it's been quite some time now that he struggled with the quads, like with the quattro. And, you know, I think if he managed to get like a decent consistency with those quads and get some better packaging next season, like, I think he would definitely have something. But I'm just like right now just looking at his quads and wondering, you know, is he going to be able to stabilize them?
So, moving into the next discipline, we have ice dance. I feel like this whole segment is just going to be us going like, welcome to the salt mine, grab a pick right. and start mining because, oh boy, this event was kind of a hot mess all over. So for the medalists, we have in gold, Madison Hubble and Zachary Donahue of the US.
In silver, we had Victoria Sinitsina and Nikita Katsalapov from Russia.
And then in bronze, we have Charlene Guinard and Marco Fabri of Italy.
Okay, so I know that we just covered this in the last episode at Internationale de France with about grade of executions on the patterns in the rhythm dance, but oh boy, there were so many issues here at the Grand Prix final this weekend, with a lot of high grades of execution being given to quite low-level patterns. Like, we had no one skated a perfectly clean pattern this weekend, but, you know, that's not really to be expected at this point, let's be honest. Hardly anyone has. But we saw a lot of teams, you know, teams that have the kind of reputation going into the event, they're getting the really high GOEs when they're not hitting the key points of the pattern, as opposed to like teams that don't have as much of a reputation as others and they're skating the pattern better, but they're getting lower GOEs. Like, we have Hubble and Donahue, whose section one was a level one, and they got plus 2.5 grade of execution. And then we have Italian team, Guignard Fabri, who got a level 4 and they only got plus 2.
Yeah, and it just goes back to what I said, if you listen to my rant in the last episode, about how levels don't even really seem to matter, especially with the pattern, because there's only like half a point difference between the levels. There's not very much differentiating them, and so it doesn't give the teams enough incentive to perfect the pattern. At the same time, 0.5, that is like a pretty decent, that can be a pretty decent margin.
Especially in dance.
Right, especially in dance when every single point counts. But when you have such high fluctuations or you have such a higher range of scores you can give with the GOE now, with the plus 5, minus 5, you definitely have a lot more incentive to try to improve the GOE and not work on the key points, I think.
Yeah. And even that, like, you look at the, like, official guidelines for GOE for the patterns, and you're not technically allowed to award plus 4s and plus 5s if the team doesn't complete 100% of the steps in the pattern. And we saw Hubble and Donahue get multiple plus 4s on their patterns, and they got a level 1 and a level 2. And it's just really worrying because they didn't execute the pattern very well, and yet they're getting way higher GOEs than other teams that did, because we had both Guinard and Fabri and Sinitsia Katsalapov getting level 4s on the first section, and we had Zagorski and Guerrero getting level 4 on the second section, and both of them had, all of those teams had lower grades of execution than Hubble and Donahue had on their sections, and same with Hawaii and Baker, who, you know, continuing their trend from the past couple of competitions they've been at, having low levels on the pattern, but still getting quite good GOE despite that. I really didn't agree with the scoring in general in the rhythm dance. I would have put the Italian couple first over Hubble and Donahue.
Yeah, same.
I think out of all the teams there, they were definitely like the technicians. They have by far the best edge control and like skating skills. The way that they use their knees to push so effortlessly across the ice just makes their skating look so smooth. And it's impressive how they can do all their lifts and all of their other acrobatic elements so well, but considering they don't really have much of a height difference between them,
yep,
it's certainly not a problem for them. And overall, they probably had the best pattern out of all the teams there. You know, especially when you're looking at the patterns and you're looking at, like, the first section with the rocker in the first bit, how most teams do it completely flat. They have such a clear edge, both in entry and exit.
It is so clear.
It is so good to watch.
I remember watching them in practice for the first time. I am not super familiar with Guignard and Fabri. I didn't really follow them that much last year. I remember seeing them, but I didn't really follow them. But my first time seeing them live, I immediately was like, oh my goodness, those rockers are so clear. Like, no question that they would definitely get that key point. And
yeah,
their movements are just so, so fluid and crisp. Like, that is the one thing that I noticed about them, is that yeah, they are definitely the technicians of this entire flight of dancers. Although it is really ironic, though, I remember during one of the run-throughs, I remember commenting to someone, like, they have such amazing skating skills. And then as soon as I said that, Marco completely wiped out, like, during some of the step sequences. I was like,
you jinxed
okay.
him.
Yep, I did. I totally jinxed. I was like, okay, well, you know what? Better during practice than during the actual competition. And they did really well during the competition. So get that pancake out early.
I'm so glad that they did so well, because, like, I really started, like, starting in the season, I really was kind of neutral in my opinions to them. Like, I knew that they were the second, like, top Italian dance team after Anna and Luca. And I really wasn't, like, I remember speaking on the Grand Prix Helsinki episode, I was not expecting them to kind of get that rise in scores that they have over the past season, especially, well, with their free dance at Helsinki, where they scored, I think, 118 in a program with a fall. And I didn't really agree with that there. But here, when they skated two pretty clean programs, their levels were pretty good throughout both of their programs. I was just really surprised at how effortless their skating is and how good they are. They're really an outstanding team. Even if both of their programs aren't my favorite stylistically, their free dances, I mean, I'm not big on La La Land in general. I'm just glad that their La La Land doesn't have City of Stars in it,
right?
Because I'm so sick of that song. But it's, you know, I do like the fact that they are really passionate about that program, because last season they were going to use La La Land for their free dance at the Olympics, but then a couple of teams announced that they were going to do it, including, if you guys remember, Chalk and Bates announced it early in the season, and then they scrapped that to do their Imagine free dance.
So now they get to use it.
Yeah, and I think that they're the only ones who are allowed to do La La Land from now on, because I think it's terrible skating music, so boring, unless it's done by them. Because, like, they can actually pull off that vibe, you know, like, they're sort of old-fashioned, smooth things. And I definitely think that, you know, La La Land, you know, would not work in any other discipline, like, as far as singles go, like, you know, doesn't mesh. But when it's done with, like, these, like, really skilled ice dancers, then it actually, like, works well.
Yeah. I mean, in general, I agree. I'm not a huge, like, on La La Land programs, but I mean, they definitely performed it really well. I don't think it's, like, the program to me, at least I don't think it's the program best suited for them. I think that they would definitely do better with something more dramatic. I think the tango suits them very well, even if it's not super memorable, just because Charlene in particular has such sharp features and, like, such dramatic features that they would do so well with, especially how crisp their movements are, you know, something more dramatic, which is why I think their rhythm dance is a stronger vehicle for them. Just in general, that entire second group in the free dance had better rhythm dances than, like, their rhythm dance was the stronger of their two programs, which is why I was, like, a little less excited about the free dance in the second flight, but, you know, because of the way that the scores played out.
I love Charlene and Marco's reactions in the kiss and cry with their coach.
And yeah, Barbara Fuserpoli's reactions as well.
She was so good.
We were sitting, like, right by the kiss and cry. So I pointed out, like, do you see, like, Barbara's reactions? She was so into it. She even had, like, a timer, I think.
She had a stopwatch.
Yeah.
I think she was timing the lifts. Yeah.
Yes. Which I thought it was so cute. Like, she was just, like, yelling, yes, yes, yes.
She's always so over the top. I love her.
Did they have a coach cam on her on the stream? Like, did they show her replay?
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah, like, she shows some great reactions. So that was adorable.
So going on to Hubble and Donahue, you know, I wasn't surprised that they came away with the gold at this event, but I was kind of surprised at the scores they were getting despite their base value. They had the lowest overall base value out of all of the teams there. Out of all six teams, they had the lowest base value in both overall and in the free dance. They had some pretty bad level problems in the free. They had a level 2 spin, and everything besides the twizzles was level 3 or lower. And they scored a season's best with a huge score. You know, it was 124. That was huge for the performance that they put out there. And I'm not necessarily fond of the changes that they've done to both programs. I especially don't like the addition of Yosoi Maria in the rhythm dance. I hate Maria. I'm so sick of that song because it is in every second rhythm dance. Like, you see it multiple times at every competition.
Yeah, I was so sad they changed the twizzles. That was like my favorite part of their program. Their arm variations in the twizzles at Skate America and Skate Canada are incredible. And they changed it for the Grand Prix final, and I'm like really upset about that.
Yeah, it didn't work as well. That was the one like standout feature of their rhythm dance for me beforehand. Now it's just kind of become unmemorable.
Although their twizzles are really good. Like, I will say that they're very quick. Like, they have really fast twizzles, and, you know, they have the leg at the 45 degree angle, which is really hard to do. So, but I miss their original ones.
And like in their free dance, the changes that they made to the first half of it, I am, again, not a huge fan of them. And I think especially with the quite heavy dramatic music, Maddie in particular, her facial expressions were a little bit too over the top for me. They were quite intense to the point where I was just like, whoa, calm down a bit, girl, please. It kind of made me distracted. I wasn't focusing so much on their skating. I was focusing on her kind of over-expressing the dramaticness of the music.
Yeah.
Overall, I'm just not a fan of that free dance. I think it's stylistically a bad choice for them and kind of goes against their strengths as a team.
Yeah. It just feels so uninspired is my thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that they did Romeo and Juliet because they really were passionate about Romeo and Juliet.
They said earlier in the season that they chose the Romeo and Juliet theme because they wanted to skate to Kissing You. And, you know, that's fine, but I think their strengths as a team lie elsewhere. I think they do better on the more, like, smooth, like, seductive style programs, like their free dance from last season. I think that was a really good choice for them.
Right, yeah. Go for the more modern. Like, I think that the modern programs suit them way better. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they'll stack up at U.S. Nationals against Chalk and Bates once we see them competing against each other, because the free dance, they're still getting the scores. I mean, clearly the Federation is ready to put all their eggs into the Hubble Donahue basket, I think. So it'll be interesting, though, to see what Chalk and Bates will do and how their programs will look, because this program, I don't think, is a good vehicle for Hubble and Donahue at all. It's just not, it's not at their level, I think. They're so much better than this program.
And of course, we have to bring up Stepanova and Buchan. The fourth place finishes at the event.
Very, very sad.
I think a lot of us are very sad about this. In the rhythm dance, they had a really hard time on the pattern. They scored a basic level for the first section. I don't know if this is like due to sort of like a mental block from the last competition that they had.
I think it is, because like they scored pretty well in Helsinki, if I recall correctly, and earlier in this season they scored pretty well, and I don't know what happened. It might just be because of that mistake that they made in the first, or that Sasha made in the first part at Rostelecom.
So they were they were within a point of Sinitsina and Katsalapov in the rhythm dance. And so with the fourth place placement in the rhythm dance, they got bumped to the first group in the free.
I think that was the kicker for them. Like, that was that was it. The fact that they were put into the first group and then the PCS just weren't there for the first group.
Yeah, I was really upset, because I think performance-wise, they skated that free dance to the best of their abilities here. That is the best performance I've seen them do with that free dance.
Yep, I totally agree. We were so into that program, and I think the crowd was into it as well. Like, I heard a lot of screaming, and I don't know if it was just because we were all screaming, but we were so into it. And oh man, it's just such a shame.
While their execution of the elements wasn't as smooth as Rostelecom was, I mean, like in the twizzles.
Yeah, Ivan kind of stumbled out of his first set.
Yeah, he stumbled out of the first set, so he lost some vital GOE on that. But apart from that, everything else was pretty smooth. I think I found in a couple of sections, especially in the second half of the program, I think Sasha's skating skills kind of dipped off a little bit. She kind of seemed a little bit more tentative in her steps. And she kind of has that problem where she doesn't use her knees as effectively to push to her steps through. And so some of her skating can look a little bit stilted.
I feel like it's also because her legs are so, so long that...
Yeah, noodle legs.
It is even more noticeable when she is stiff.
But apart from that, the program was skated really well. And I was honestly expecting the score to be in the 120s because I was expecting them to get around the 56 mark for PCS. And then when the score came in right around 119, I was completely shocked. And yeah, I think it was the real kicker that they were unfortunately bumped to the first group because of their performance in the rhythm dance. And it makes me really sad considering they've had such a good trajectory over the season. You know, they've taken gold at every event so far apart from this. And just, I really worry for them going into Russian nationals, especially since Sinitsyna and Katsalapov had a better placement here and the Russian judges went with them in both segments.
That's what I worry about as well, especially also going into Euros, because Euros is going to be just a bloodbath because Papadakis and Cizarone weren't even at the Grand Prix final. So it'll be Papadakis, Cizarone, Kasenitsa, Katsalapov, Greenard and Fabry and Stepanov and Bukin. So it's going to be really, really tough.
So let's move on to the ladies now. So in gold, we have Riga Kihira of Japan.
And then in silver, Alina Zagitova of Russia.
And in bronze, Elizaveta Tuktomysheva from Russia. Okay, let's start with Riga.
That short program completely blew my mind.
Oh my goodness.
It was insane. The way that she executed all of her elements so perfectly and skated with such a grace and just perfect carriage, it shocked me how amazingly she skated. Even if that program isn't my cup of tea stylistically, I'm just so impressed with her and her skating.
Yeah, I'm just impressed that a girl who was known for being inconsistent in juniors has managed to create such a strong debut. Like, especially given that she had successes that no one could anticipate in the beginning of the season. I mean, she didn't even get two assignments. Like, she got the host pick for NHK. So I was kind of thinking, like, in the beginning of the season that she wouldn't really know how to handle the pressure. And then especially going into IDF after winning the NHK. And then, you know, going into her first final with strong medal chances. But she's kept it together so well.
Yeah, I just think that she just comes across so mature. You know, considering she's a first year senior and like she doesn't panic when things aren't going right and she just regroups so quickly. Like, this isn't the first time that she's, you know, messed up on a triple axel, but this was a really different instance because she was the last skater. There's a lot of pressure on her because she was finally leading going into the free. And, you know, the first slip on the triple axel could have been so disastrous. Like, in the replay, I was like, oh my God, she was so close to banging her knee on the ice. Yet she just kind of stayed calm and then, you know, regrouped. And then she just landed one of the most gorgeous triple axels I've ever seen. That was another jump that was right in front of me. So it looked so massive. And she also managed to put it into a combo. And you can just see how well trained that program is. It's just a result of multiple full run throughs. And, you know, the training really pays off in competitions. And I can even see during practice, you know, she wasn't perfect in practice. She landed, you know, maybe half or 60% of her triple axels or just on her jumps. I remember she fell during like a triple Lutz triple toe combo during one of her run throughs, but it never seems to get into her head. It was just like, okay, so that happened. Let's try that again. She's just incredible.
Especially since, you know, nearly for the majority of last season, when she's stuffed up jumps in the first half of a program, the second half kind of completely falls to pieces. Yeah, mm-hmm. It just went and consistently throughout these last two competitions at IDF and here, when she's had issues at the start of her programs, she's been able to keep up the momentum so well and so effectively and be able to deliver such strong performances. And even with the problem with the first triple axel and the free skate, you know, because of how good the rest of her technical elements were, she was still able to get a really, really high score. And I think that's such a confidence booster to know that you're skating overall so well-roundedly that you're still going to be able to, you know, get the benefit of the grade of execution on your other elements. And you're going to be able to get those higher scores is really going to be good. I think that mainly, you know, Japanese Nationals is only in a couple of weeks. She's coming in with a real gold streak. She's coming in with really strong programs, but she's also going to be coming in with probably the most pressure she's had so far in her career, because she's got that expectation now built up over the past couple of months. And so I'm going to be really interested to see if she'll be able to keep that mentality well under that kind of stress if she makes mistakes, or if she'll be able to move past that and be able to skate good programs at nationals. Because that's really, I really hope that she will be able to do that, because I think Rika is going to become such a prominent skater in the field if she keeps up the momentum that she's building.
The pressure especially is going to be so crazy, because she is now like the girl that unseated the Olympic champion, even when, you know, they both skated fairly well. But just, I just need to talk about the program again, because we all know how much I love this program. And I just need to say that just seeing this program, it's like one of those moments that it makes you so grateful to be in the arena. And it's so fascinating sometimes just in general to see how music comes across live across the speakers versus seeing it on the stream. The first time I saw Rika's program was Nepala. It was on like the really bad stream. We were watching it at ACI, and it was one of those ones where the music just got overlaid over like the speaker. So to me, it didn't have like a super, I remember being like, oh, I remember seeing it in ice shows, but it's not the same as it in competition, and being like, oh, okay, that's a really nice program. I think this will be good. But then seeing this live, it's one of those pieces that it takes you to another place, because like the sound effects with the thunder and the rain, they feel so much more immersive when you're there live. And it's like, it sounds so cheesy, but like the sound of her blades complements the music so well too. Like during those backwards staccato movements in the step sequence that I love so much, goes right along the notes, like the piano notes, but then also like the tapping of her toe picks also, like it was also again right in that corner. It was just so perfect. And I love that program so much. Like I'm obsessed with it.
Like I feel like I must question her incredible PCS rise.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at skating scores on Twitter. They're doing great work with graphs, and they published like the PCS increase, the PCS of ladies. And she jumped from like 67 and 66 at NHK and IDF to 72 here. Like, this is the sharpest PCS increase we've seen since Alina last season.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. As soon as she won the Grand Prix final and her PCS just skyrocketed.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is like her and Alina were the only ones to get 70 plus PCS. And I'm just wondering, like, is it justified that they are getting those scores? Or like, is this a case of the judges sort of inflating scores to keep up with what they see as like the next big thing in ladies? I was wondering, would she have gotten that score, that PCS, if she hadn't won both of her Grand Prix events?
I felt like it was just more proof that judges are willing to reward consistency, like really, or high consistency at a high, with a high technical content, because this is a trend that we've seen for a while with the men, right? Where the men that have like a lot of quads, or higher technical content also seem to get the higher PCS, even when some of the skaters with maybe no quads or fewer quads maybe should have deserved the higher ones. And, you know, this is also only one competition. We've only seen Rika, on the Grand Prix three times. And so it's very possible also that Rika's PCS were a result of skating last or in the final group, because the crowd reaction to her free skate was completely insane. And, you know, skaters that skate last, they have that momentum, especially if they skate really well. So that also is another thing. But also, I just know that the PCS in comparison to some other skaters was very, very jarring. I think that's where the questioning lies with me, at least. That's definitely the main issue. But it seems that Rika has really closed the PCS gap with Alina.
Which is interesting to see, like, how it's going to go, like, during the second half of the season.
Right.
And when we're talking about Alina, so she got silver here. She was like the clear favorite going in. And I'm just wondering, her recent struggles, are they like mental or physical? Because there was some issue of injury, right?
Right. Ted said that she tripped on a TV cable and injured her foot or her ankle, and she was considering withdrawing. So it seems like it was a pretty big deal.
And obviously she didn't skate a clean and free as well. You know, she popped the combo, the first combo, into a triple at single toe.
But she's also seemed very stressed throughout the season, and like she hasn't been able to keep the consistency that she was known for last season.
Well, you know, she is coming into the season as the Olympic champion, while also coming in with, you know, she's been suffering from growth spurts and the associated medical problem with that, what's it called, Osgood-Schlatter's syndrome. And so she's had really problems with that and pain associated with it. And, you know, those issues kind of surmount, and, you know, we weren't expecting her to be perfectly clean here because she hasn't been as clean and consistent as she has been last season. But it is kind of worrying, especially to see like at the end of her programs, the look that she has on her face and how disappointed that she looks in her performances. Because, you know, even if she had the issues, she still put out pretty good performances, I would say, here.
Yeah, I just thought that her performance, especially in the short program, seemed quite rushed.
She looks panicked.
Yeah. And like all of her movements, they don't feel quite finished. And yeah. When I saw her live in Helsinki, I thought she was like, she's very, very lovely. I think she's better live.
She absolutely is.
But also I think like her expression has deteriorated since like the start of the season, actually.
I will say that Alina is a lot faster in person than she comes across on the stream. One of my biggest gripes with her skating was that she was slow, or she seemed a lot more slow and laggy and, you know, hunchy. But in general, her speed seems more improved and also comes across a lot better in person. So
also, I want to talk about my favorite lady who didn't podium. And, you know, some people were quite upset that we didn't talk about her when we were talking about the Grand Prix previews last episode. But Kaori Sakamoto, all around great, but not on the podium.
I definitely would have put her way higher in the short program for what she put out. Her skating in that was perfect. It was just so lovely to watch. And I would have put her third, if not maybe even second, in the short program. I think an argument could be made for that. But you know, to see her, the PCS.
Yeah.
To see her get fourth by such a small margin was quite disappointing, I feel.
Yeah, and Kaori just like, she's just such a breath of fresh air. Just her skating is just so lovely and just smooth and wonderful. And even when she fell on that three jump combo in the free, she just kind of like laughed it off, like, oh God, like, that was a fluke, you know, that shouldn't have happened. I was also kind of like mentally screaming, like, why did you put on that double toe?
Yes, I thought she would,
Just ditch it. And, you know, she was so happy and smiley, and she just has such a lightness to her entire demeanor, and it comes across in her skating as well.
I mean, honestly, her free skate is my favorite program this season. Because you have the choreographic sequence and then followed by the triple loop. It's just such a masterfully created moment.
Those spirals right in front of the judges, like,
yeah,
so beautiful.
Like, I'm seriously crying every single time she skated it this season.
Yes. So she's just so wonderful.
Yeah. I definitely think that her GOE could be a bit higher on most of her elements because, you know, she's really such a talented jumper.
Yeah. They're massive. Yeah. Her jumps are massive.
I think that she definitely deserves to get higher GOE.
And her double axel.
Yeah, the double axel. Yeah.
She has the one of the best triple flip. Yeah, but, oh, God.
Like, if you look at her protocols, it's filled with threes. And I'm just wondering, okay, her jumps are so good. So why am I seeing a protocol that is like basically only threes and twos and not any fours? Like,
agreed.
That's why I'm wondering, you know, Alina and Rika are getting the fours, but why isn't Kaori?
And just speaking about just abhorrent scoring and PCS, we need to talk about Satoko's PCS because they were criminal. I feel like it's criminal to give Satoko anything below a 9 or just even 9s. Like, she should be getting consistently mid to high 9s if she doesn't make any major mistakes, which she didn't here. Like, yeah, she got dinged for under rotations like crazy, and those should be called, of course, but those aren't kinds of mistakes that take you out of a performance and should not affect your performance components, your program components. So seeing that she got less than 70, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that's just not right at all. Especially because, like, I was completely sobbing during her free skate. Like, I couldn't even take photos or anything. I was just crying through it the entire time. And everyone was just so mesmerized by her performance. And it was another one of those situations where you see the score pop up and then, like, the entire crowd just goes like, oh, like, you know, it's
yeah,
those are such uncomfortable moments.
You could see it in her in the kiss and cry as well, as soon as the score comes up and she literally kind of like just goes, oh, and it's just so heartbreaking to watch because she really deserved to be scored much higher than she did.
It happened last year too.
Yeah.
And like, didn't her TES drop by like over 10 points or something?
Yeah, it's like, it dropped a humongous amount.
Oh god,
her PCS were just a mess in the free skating. I don't know why the judges didn't put her over 70. It was just shocking.
I was wondering why not put Kaori over 70 as well, because yeah, she's also like improved a lot in her program components and become a beautiful performer. So I was just wondering, like, both of them should, you know, according to me, get 70 plus.
And like, if we're gonna reward consistency, Satoko is the definition of consistent. Like, she has put out like 6 like pretty flawless programs, barring the under rotations. Like, she hasn't fallen. Like, it's like incredible. Like, I'm just so confused at why the judges have suddenly decided to drop her.
And she's doing this all while retooling her entire technical foundation.
Which is incredible.
It's incredible to see the results that she's getting while she's completely reworking her jumping technique to, you know, get that extra height in her jumps so that she's going to be able to get the higher GOEs, because she's really not able to get past, like, 1s and 2s most of the time because her jumps just aren't that big in comparison to a lot of the other ladies. So it's just really astounding how well she can perform consistently throughout each of her competitions while still going through all these major changes.
Like, if we're gonna ding her on the technical, then at least give her the program components so that she can compete. Like, she should be one of the podium contenders easily, if not, you know, gold medal contender. We should talk about the bronze medalist, Elizaveta Tuktomysheva. What did you think?
I think that she did pretty well, considering that she did have some issues in parts of her program. Her triple axel overall this weekend wasn't completely as stable. Mm-hmm. She turned out, yeah. And I think overall, her performances of both of her programs were really, really strong. I think they definitely have peaked so far.
Right.
Yeah. In the free skate, especially the choreo sequence at the end, her face was just so expressive.
It is so expressive. Although I don't like the reworking of the choreo in that section, because I feel like it worked better when the cantilever was right on when the music was starting to rev up
build a little bit. Yeah.
Like, she puts the cantilever now after that moment, and I don't think it works as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, in general, just like the choreo sequence work is really great, and it's definitely one of the highlights. But I think that, like, it's really impressive how consistent she is. Besides the triple axel, the rest of her jumps look fantastic. And she brought back the triple lutz triple toe. It is massive.
Yeah, and she did the triple lutz triple toe in the free with a tanner on both of the jumps, which was extremely impressive. I was not expecting her to put it on both of them, and to see it like that and see it so clean and perfect. I mean, her triple lutz is a dream. It's just beautiful.
It's just so perfect. And I think that technical consistency is what has been working for her this season, because she's definitely got the lower end of the PCS at least among the top ladies. So having the triple axel and being so consistent with the rest of her jumps.
She landed 8 triples in the free skate. That's an impressive achievement.
So, so impressive. Like, she just knows how to peak post-Olympics, I guess.
I have to say that I loved the sequence that she did in the free, the triple sal, double axel. I love sequences.
Yes, yes. She's, oh man, she's just really, really, really fun. Like, she's definitely not one of the more polished skaters, at least skating wise, but like, she really does give a lot in the performance and expression, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, it makes up for that. While I don't agree with her placement in the short program over Kaori, I think that her skating overall and her trajectory over the season is just so impressive to watch, and I really hope that she'll do well at Russian nationals and hopefully, you know, get spots on the European and Worlds team and continue that really good rise over the rest of the season now, because it's just so impressive. It's so great to see her, you know, come back.
And just, you know, talking about, you know, Russian skaters that have been surprising me, at least, I really want to talk about Sofia Samadurova.
Yes.
Because she... like, no one expected that she would even make the Grand Prix final, and yet she nailed 2 really good programs, and she was just so happy and excited with herself. She was so emotional after her free skate. It was just so lovely to see, you know, her come out and perform so consistently, and I don't know, like, she has a really good shot of making the world's team, I think, now, considering how well she's done and how consistent she's been. So it'll be really interesting to see how the results kind of play out at Russian Nationals and see if, you know, if Zhenya comes back with a vengeance, I guess, now that she's basically been able to take a month off since she just missed out on the Grand Prix final. But, you know, what an event it was.
Well, that was an inspired performance. That's the best I've seen this young lady skate.
So, shout out of the week for this week. It's been a couple of rough weeks for the figure skating fandom in general, because we've had the onslaught of YouTube takedowns of figure skating related channels. You know, a humongous amount of them have gotten deleted due to copyright violations over the past couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's been really rough for the community. You know, we've had so many content providers get taken down. It's been really hard to access footage from the Grand Prix and from other previous events. There's only a handful of the big, well-known YouTube channels that still remain, and it's just really disheartening to see that kind of takedown of channels that are really doing good things for the accessibility of the sport.
Yeah, especially if you can't watch these events live. Like, these YouTube channels are so quick to provide, you know, the programs and the replays, and it's just so heartbreaking to see them get taken down, because how are we going to grow the sport if we don't have a way to, you know, share the programs with the public? So yeah, shout out to all of the channels that have put up a backup or like a started other channels or found other ways of sharing the content.
And shout out to the people on Twitter who are trying to get
to save them
archives up. yeah. Good job for everyone trying to save all of those videos from all of those channels, mass downloading channels before they got taken down.
And then I also want to quickly give a shout out to all of the people that came up to us during the Grand Prix final and, you know, listened to our podcast, and were just so friendly to all of us. And, you know, we all had such a great time there, and we thought that the crowd was amazing and warm and inviting, and I definitely would love to go back to, you know, a competition like the Grand Prix final again. So shout out to everyone.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week for an episode all about the Junior Grand Prix final.
If you want to get in touch with us, then please feel free to contact us via our website, intheloadpodcast.com, or on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook. You can find our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify.
If you enjoyed the show and want to help support the team, then please consider making a donation to us on our Ko-fi page. And we'd like to give a huge thank you to all the listeners who have contributed to our team thus far.
You can find the links to all our social media pages and our Ko-fi on the website.
If you're listening on iTunes, then please consider leaving a rating and a review if you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. This has been Evie,
Kat,
and Zilda. Bye.
Bye.
See you soon.
Bye.